Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Houlihan. Into the penalty area.
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, there's loads coming up today and the new Premier League season gets underway this lunchtime. Fulham welcome fellow Londoners Arsenal to Craven Cottage at 12:30, and that's followed at 3 by Crystal Palace's meeting with Southampton. And of course, the champions Liverpool begin the defence of their title at home to the newly promoted Leeds at 5:30. So we'll be discussing all of that a little bit in the papers, but also with Alan Cawley later on in the show. There's loads as well in racing this weekend. We'll have David Atwood, Racing and Operations Manager at Leopardstown Racecourse, discussing the future of crowds at the races and all of the wonderful redevelopment works that have been going on up in Leopardstown. And we'll also have a preview of the weekend with Conor O'Hare on the weekend's Longines Irish Champions, which take place in Leopardstown, of course, this weekend as well. In NFL, Stephen O'Brien is back and he'll be giving us all his latest news and fixtures with the brand new NFL season officially beginning. And in rugby, of course, there's final time. Peter and myself will be in studio talking about the Pro 14 final as Leinster take on Ulster in the Aviva Stadium at 7:45. Tonight, GAA, we'll be talking to Declan Drake about the build-up this weekend's Senior Club Football Championships and the semi-finals. And in football, of course, as I said, Alan Cawley will be coming on a little bit later on to talk about all things domestic and, of course, the Premier League season kicking off. We have a major moment in sport this week, and with the week that's in it, been good for Irish cycling. We'll be looking back on Stephen Roach's exceptional year in 1987 when he etched his name on the Tour de France history. So, as usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. And, of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook at Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Well, I'm delighted to be joined by Paul Morris and Peter Breen here in studio for the papers this morning. Morning, lads. How are we?
Morning, Rich.
Yeah, all good. Cycling. Oh, I'll start off. I'll get the ball rolling. What about that Bradley Wiggins dope during the week? That was great, wasn't it? What a start. What a way to make me feel good and not get my blood boiling.
Let's start about the good story of Sam Bennett for a change. Yeah, fantastic to see Sam pick up a win and going well in the tour, all right. But yeah, Bradley Wiggins opened his mouth then and there. Ireland lost the run of themselves, I think.
Did we lose the run of ourselves?
Yeah. Well, have you finished your rant yet, Reggie?
Yeah. I hate the way we're always expected to just sit back and take it as if it's no big deal, you know. I don't be getting so excited about it and everything else. Was anyone else? They'd be out marching on the streets. But anyway.
Look, there's a couple of points about it. One, it's a typical kind of British colonialism rule, you know, where they're going to divide and you're going to conquer and claim whoever you can. And I think it's poor by Sean Kelly. He should have called, and by the presenter as well, for Kelly just to kind of awkwardly smile and not interrupt and actually not correct him and show a bit of wit was quite poor. It's bad enough that Dermot Kennedy had to call them out for claiming Paul Mescal as well during the week. But anyone who flourishes in the British system is ripe for the picking in their eyes. And if you look at it, you know, there's very little nod for John Barnes going back to Jamaica, where he would have been born and whatever else over the years. On the other side of it as well, the kind of logical side of my brain is kind of going, like, why are we really getting that psychologically worried about this? It's bad enough that they can't pronounce surnames like Doherty and Moran and McGrath. Yeah, exactly. But it's... No, but look, but actually, my whole point about this Sam Bennett point is, if it's anyone who should be frustrated, it's the people of Belgium, because Sam Bennett was born in Flanders. He wasn't even born in Ireland.
About that part of it. I was just annoyed about the fact that, you know, the way you lot, you know, I can't understand you at the best of time, that type of thing. It was just more that and I wouldn't agree about Sean Kelly. I think Sean Kelly was just caught on the hop. He was probably more in shock than anything else that someone would say something like that on television, because the look on his face was real sort of surprised. But And I'm not trying to make a big deal of it, but the point I'm trying to make is that there's no other nation or nationality or race of people that would be expected to just sit back and take it without a reaction. If that was any other race, Peter, and somebody turned around and said, we can't understand you, whether it be, you know, an Indian person, Pakistani, Asian, whatever, there'd be uproar, absolute uproar that a presenter could say something like that on the television.
You know, you look, when you look at the clowns to the left of us over in America and the jokers to the right in Britain, you know, we tend to get very angsty whenever anyone says anything boo against us. Like, it's not important. They're idiots. They really have very little bearing on the Irish nation.
I understand they are, but there also seems to be a case of, well, we're expected to just, you know, it's only a bit of crack, you know, take it. And we're expected to sit back and take it. But anyway, rant over. Okay. Next time, Sean Kelly. Okay.
Put down the pint and let's get on with the show.
Be ready, come back at them. Yeah. You know, it's hard for people to understand you when they're not educated. That's the way I would say.
That's true.
So say all of us.
Yeah. Go on, so give me the rest now. It's a great Premier League time. Wonderful start this week. Of course, the champions defending their title against the newcomers a little bit later on this evening. And Arsenal getting things underway.
Well, we'll look at the back pages there first, Reg. It's all about the two managers going head-to-head at 5:30. I can't win is the Irish Mirror there. That's Klopp, not the league. But the market, as Klopp says, people seem to think I've either spent too much or not enough. And then you look at the back of other pages and it's all about Bielsa, the man who's led Leeds to the promised land and brought them back to the Premier League after 16 years.
That's right, yeah.
You know, it's going to be fascinating. Pity the crowd aren't there because they would have loved to get on top of both coaches here. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to have a quick look at the sideline during this game today, 5:30. But yeah, Liverpool, it's a standout tie. And yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to the league coming back.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting season this year. Some clubs have certainly invested heavily. You look at the likes of Chelsea, you look at Everton. Obviously, Man United are going to be looking to make a splash. Man City are going to be strong, even though they didn't manage to get Messi over the line. But it's going to be pretty exciting to see what shape and the speed in which they can hit the ground running. You'd imagine we're kind of going through the fixtures and just to see where some teams might be caught in the hop early. And it's, you know, the fact that the home and away nature of matches now is going to be negated somewhat by the fact that there's no crowds there, and just to see what kind of impact that's going to have. So just trying to pick out where there might be a queer result today. Possibly Leeds might nick something at Liverpool, was the feeling with you lads, which I thought was bizarre, but anyway, good luck to you. But it's Everton is going to be a very interesting team this year, and Chelsea obviously. But I think Chelsea are going to more feel the pressure, and all you get the sense is Lampard got very angsty whenever you know, a result or two went against him last year, even though they did show a lot of promise in some big games, i.e. City towards the end of the season. So that's going to be, I think he's going to immediately feel pressure because he cannot feel that he wasn't supported in the transfer market this summer. Everton is an interesting one because everyone seems to forget Ancelotti's record everywhere he's been, and they've made some big statements of intent as well.
Mm-hmm. Be interesting to see how it all unfolds. All right, I suppose the questions are always about who do you think is going to win it, who's going to go down, who's going to be the surprise package. What sort of teams are standing out in your mind with that, Paul?
I'm going to go with the surprise package. I'm going to pick the Everton. We were talking about this just off air. Maybe to go down, I'm probably looking at Burnley or Brighton. I'm going to stick my neck out. I'll go with Brighton on that one. And to win, I probably go with Man City. It probably kills me to say, but I'll go with City to win.
What about you, Peter?
I would go, start as the positive firstly, Liverpool to win the league, just because I just feel everyone was so hung up on the fact that they haven't really strengthened bar reserve left back, but do they need to? And Minamino is going to be very interesting. He seems to have hit pre-season very strongly. Surprise package, I think Southampton or Everton. I think Southampton, Hasenhüttl did an extraordinary job when you consider the beating that they got against Leicester last year and how he completely turned around the fortunes there, and as I mentioned, Everton as well. And to go down, I can't see Fulham contributing a huge amount to the league this year. Scott Parker, Brighton, again, the interest a bit with Shane Duffy moving to Celtic and to a spiritual home up in Celtic Park. I can't really engage anyway with Brighton and how they fare, particularly in how the manner in which they treated Chris Hughton. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. There's always a surprise package. You'd love to see Leeds do well. because they're such a massive club. You'd love to see Villa do better again for the same reason, but they were very, very lucky last year.
Yeah.
So it's an exciting year. And, you know, well, on one hand, we are, it's going to be a lesser league because of the lack of fans. But on the other, there's so many subplots and some really outstanding managers as well. So it's going to be a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I think, you know, just personally, I don't see Arsenal doing it, unfortunately. But you never know. They've surprised me in the past, but I don't see that happening. But Liverpool certainly look like the team that are the strongest and just seem to have more consistency compared to the others. So I think, you know, Liverpool, although City obviously have so much going for them as well, you can't write them off, but between the two of them, more than likely, it's hard to see United. You'd like to see them get back into it a little bit more than they have, but I just don't think they're quite there yet. I think the surprise package personally would be Leeds, because we don't know much about them, but I think they're going to do okay. I think they're going to have an all right season. It's a tough start for them today, obviously, but I think they're going to have an all right season. I think they're probably, the fact that they're back and the passion that will bring and the fans that they'll bring to it and everything else will mean that they'll perform well throughout it. And I think they are stronger than the likes of Villa and Brighton and even West Ham and these teams. They just haven't performed in recent seasons to the level that they should. And I think, as you said, Peter, Villa were blessed. Brighton, you just don't ever hear anything really about them during the season. They just kind of, like, you could forget that they were in the league. So I think the two of them will be under serious pressure to stay up. But it does look like it's going to be a really good league this year. And, you know, I suppose Liverpool ran away with it last year, but I don't see that being the case this year. I think it's going to be a lot closer.
One of the big, just moving on from it, but I don't know if any of you have seen the All or Nothing documentary on Tottenham Hotspur on Amazon Prime. No. It's kind of the Jose Mourinho show now, in fairness, but the access is really, really outstanding, to the point of, if you remember the massive fallout with Son and Hugo Lloris, where they were at each other just coming off the pitch at halftime. The row continues into the dressing room. Like, they didn't filter it. And Mourinho is obviously box office anyway, whether you like him or hate him. He's hugely interesting, but it's a very good documentary if anyone is on it. I was going to talk about Cobra Kai, but karate really isn't. But it's actually really good. If anyone like Karate Kid and is feeling a bit nostalgic, it's actually very good. But I know we're hoping to chat to Mark Horgan over the next couple of weeks, but the Where is George Gibney podcast is such an important topic as well. And if anyone's had a chance to listen to it on BBC, it's outstanding. Have either of you managed to listen to it?
Right up to date with it. Yeah. Loving it. Absolutely brilliant. It's a harrowing listen. It's hard to listen to some of the testimonies from some of the victims in it. It's great investigative reporting from Mark and Cass, and there's no doubt about that. A huge amount of effort went into it, and it's you know, entertaining is the wrong word, but it's riveting to listen to it, and you're stuck to it, and you're looking forward to the next
episode. Yeah.
Each week, and I think that's what a good podcast should be all about. But most importantly, I think it's really highlighting the issue again, and huge credit has to go to Gary O'Toole as well.
Yeah.
for what he did all those years ago, right the way back along. Yeah, it's fantastic. Check it out, the George Gibney podcast. It's wonderful stuff. Well, look, there's a lot to discuss on the show, so we're going to leave the papers there for the moment. There's still plenty to come. A little later on, we're going to be talking about rugby, of course, that Pro 14 final that we have this evening between Leinster and Ulster, which is going to be a really, really entertaining match. Ulster were great last week in their performance, in the way that they came back and stuck to the plan. Leinster, it was a pretty boring match, I've got to be honest with you, between the two sides. But, you know, they got their job done, and they've picked a very, very strong side for today as well. So that's going to be a very interesting final. Myself and Peter will be discussing that a little bit later on. Our magic moment is Stephen Roach, the week that's in it, and, of course, the Tour de France in 1987. We will be talking to Declan Drake as well about GAA. And just coming up after this break, we're going to be talking to David Atwood and Conor O'Hare about horse racing. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Conor O'Hare. Good morning, Conor.
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. It's a fine, beautiful morning as I look out the window here. Sun shining in Dublin. And the skyline is lovely and clear, so lending itself to some decent racing this weekend. And, of course, we have Leopardstown and the Curra coming up this weekend. It is behind closed doors and loses a little bit of the atmosphere, but no doubt the racing will still be top quality. You looking forward to it, Jarrah?
Sure, I am, yeah. Pity there's going to be no crowds, but it's... the quality of horse that we have for the weekend is pretty unbelievable. So
yeah,
it's all set fair. We have the sun now, good racing ground in Leopardstown and the Curra. So we're all set to go.
Yeah, they've certainly been doing huge work up there in Leopardstown. We're going to be talking to David Atwood a little bit after yourself a little shortly on the show. I know they've been doing huge redevelopment work up there, so the place looks absolutely fantastic. But of course, the racing this weekend as well. With the Champions Weekend is going to be something else too. So you're going to give us a little bit of a preview of that. What have you got for us in Leopardstown?
Leopardstown, the Champions Stakes, big race of the weekend. We've got Gareth coming across for Charlie Appleby for the Godolphin team. He's the star of the weekend. All eyes will be on him. It's a pity there's no crowds in to see him because he's a bit of a specimen to look at. So I'll be one of the lucky few now on track today that might get a little glimpse of him. The horse that everyone's been waiting to see, and when they confirmed during the week that he was coming over for the Champions Stakes, it was a big plus for Irish racing and for Leopardstown. So I'd expect him to get the job done in that one.
Okay, Peter.
A few Aidan O'Brien horses to beat, and a French horse that's best, but he's the star of the show. He's probably not a betting proposition, but on the feature of the weekend, maybe keep the money in the pocket in that one, but you can might witness a superstar.
Absolutely.
There's excitement, Connor, isn't there, between Fancy Blue and Peaceful as well. It would be fascinating to see how that Aidan O'Brien double goes.
Yeah, the Matron is a good race, Fancy Blue and Peaceful. They've taken each other on a few times. Peaceful got the better of Fancy Blue in the Guineas, and then Fancy Blue turned that around in France. But it'll be a tight one, that one. I'd probably just outside of Peaceful. Johnny Martez had a great year training this year. A lot of people remember him from his days in the saddle, but he has Champers, Elise, and Know-It-All in their boat with each way chances. So it mightn't be as straightforward as the top two on the bet, and there could be a few bigger prices than that one that might run into a bit of a place and maybe worry the two favourites.
Excellent. Okay, well, give us a run through of who your fancies are for the weekend.
Fancies for the weekend. In the 3:40 today, the KPMG Champion Juvenile Stakes, there's a horse called Fernando Vici of Dunnock O'Brien's. He was very good in a maiden at Leopardstown last month, and I think he's a good bet. He's around about 5 or 6 to 1, and he'll be the first of my lucky 15 today. Down the card, then in the last race at Leopardstown, there's a horse called Bo Pedro. This is in a 7 furlong handicap. He's having his first run for Jessica Harrington. Shane Foley rides him. He's on course to be champion jockey this year, and in very good form. So he's around about 14 to 1 each way in that lucky 15 as well. And another one for the lucky 15 at a big price is in the Paddy Power. Is it 2021 yet? Stakes, the Group 3 race. A horse of Willie McCreary, trainer on the Curra, who has popped up at winners at Champions Weekend before. A horse called Up Helia is about 14 to 1 on each way in that one as well. So that's 3 for lucky 15. And skipping across to Doncaster, where the St. Ledger is on today, the English St. Ledger. Mm-hmm. Joseph O'Brien sends one across there. Galileo Chrome, it's called. That's going to be ridden now by Tom Marquand. So that's around about 4 or 5 to 1. And I think that is a big chance in the Ledger over there. So that's the lucky 15 for today. And hopefully a few winners in that.
Excellent stuff. Okay.
6,749 to 1.
Yeah, yeah. I think there'll be a few of our listeners happy if that one comes in. All right, there's no question about it.
If you get one or two, and we'll go from there, hopefully.
Absolutely, yes. So we're going each way on all of those, are we?
Lucky 15. Yeah, exactly. It's a weekend where there's lots of very competitive races. There's going to be some short price favourites, which I'll be steering clear of. So if you can find a bit of each way value around some of them races, then hopefully get a run for your money. And just to keep an eye, if you are having a bet on some of those handicaps, just to check how many places some of the bookmakers are paying, that you might get an offer with some of the bookmakers to get extra places, maybe 5 or 6 places. So you shop around and see what the best value is.
Very good, very good. Okay, well, the Curra is on as well, of course, this weekend. There's a few things there that you've been watching as well.
Yeah, the Curra, four group ones in the Curra tomorrow. First of them is the Downstown Stud Flying 5 Stakes. It's a sprint race. Make a Challenge is going to be favourite there for Dennis Hogan. He's had a remarkable year. People remember the horse Skeptical, the big story during the summer, who sadly passed away during the summer. But he is another good sprinter in Make a Challenge. I think he's probably the one to side with in that. But it's very very competitive race. A lot of UK challengers in that. They usually do very well in that, sending across runners for that. But probably one I'll steer clear of. The Moyglare Stud Fillies, Group 1, that's for two-year-olds. So the stars of the future, the fillies of the future. Mentioned Joseph O'Brien again. He is a short price favourite in this. And I said I'd steer clear of most of them, but this one looks fairly rock solid, pretty gorgeous, it's called. And that's a five to four shot in that race. I think that'll be very, very hard to beat, and that'll be definitely one for the Sunday Lucky 15. The two-year-old Colts, the boys, they're on next, another Group 1. It's a brilliant card at the Curra tomorrow.
Yeah.
So many Group 1s, one after the other. It's top-class stuff. Battleground is one I like in that one for Aidan O'Brien. It's won a couple of times in the UK and looks a star of the future. So that's another one for the Lucky 15 and the feature tomorrow. It's the Irish St. Ledger, mile and 6 furlongs. Dermot Weld has done very well in the race through the years. He's won it on numerous occasions. You might remember the names, Vinny Rowan, Vintage Crop. He won it last year then with Search for a Song, who hasn't had great runs this year, but is back up to the mile and 6 furlongs. And I think she's an each way play at about 8-1. Win it.
Search
for a Song.
Search for a Song, yeah.
Dermot Weld, and he won the race last year. And I think she's been a bit off the boil for a few starts, but I think they should hopefully have her right for this day, and she should go very well. They're the four group ones. There's three selections in that, and then if you just go to the last race on the day of the weekend, to finish the Sunday Lucky 15, it's the Northfields Handicap. It's over a mile and 2 furlongs. And there's a very interesting one in there of Aidan O'Brien's, Ryan Moore, who's over for the weekend. Lucky that he's got to ride with the new restrictions. He rides a horse called Kipling in that race, and he's actually doing a very, very light weight for Ryan Moore. So if he's staying around and he's doing this light weight, I think it's a tip in itself. So Kipling is about 5-1 in the last race, and hopefully we'll finish the weekend off in style.
Excellent stuff. Well, that all sounds good, Connor. We'll certainly have a look at those, and you know, you'll be a hero amongst all our listeners if that first Lucky 15 from today comes in any way, shape or form anyway, no doubt about it. Connor, thanks for chatting to us. We'll catch up with you again shortly.
No better, Rich.
Thanks a lot. That's Conor O'Hare there giving us his thoughts on the weekend and previewing the Champions Weekend in Leopardstown, of course, and we had the Curra being covered there as well, giving us two Lucky 15s, so that's given us plenty to ponder about as we look down our bet slips. So if we go first of all to today's Lucky 15, starting with the 340, Fernando Vici is a 5-1 shot each way in the KPMG, so that's the starting one. Then we've got Bo Pedro, which is a bit of an outsider at 14-1. Ophelia is the other one at 14-1, and Galileo Chrome at 4-1. So they're the four that he's picked out for today, but we will put that up on our Twitter and Facebook page for you as well. And then for tomorrow, an added bonus, another Lucky 15 there. A lot of Group 1s going off in the Curra tomorrow, so some high-end racing coming out of the Curra. We're looking at Pretty Gorgeous there as his first pick. Battleground as a second pick. Search for a Song is the third pick, and then Kipling comes in at 5-1, so that's a Lucky 15 to keep you entertained on Sunday as well. You're getting double value this week, but there's plenty of value going on in Leopardstown this weekend with the quality of racing that's going on up there, and I'm delighted to be joined by Operations Manager David Atwood to talk us through this. Good morning, David, how are you?
Good morning, Reggie, I'm very well, thank you.
Wonderful, great to chat to you again.
Thank you.
I know how big a weekend you're having up there. We'll get to that in a moment. But first of all, I want to talk to you about all the redevelopment that's going on. I know I was up there a number of weeks ago. There was tremendous work going on. It must be nearly coming towards the end of that now, is it?
It is actually, Reggie, and it's brilliantly how it's worked out this week, is that our new facilities for our weigh room and our jockeys and the building there and our big screen was actually signed off on Wednesday.
Brilliant.
So it's actually the first time we're able to use it. People will see it, obviously they won't be able to come racing, but they'll be able to see it on television with us being live on RTE and ITV.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen the place looking so good. And we've brought everything else up to standard as well. And the parade ring, there's flowers everywhere. The grass is looking unbelievable. So there's a lot of work that's gone on. Obviously, it's a shame we can't get crowds in, but the place will look fantastic on TV, and hopefully people will be able to come back racing soon.
Yeah, well, I know that this weekend was the target for you, and it's hugely disappointing that we didn't quite make it. I suppose it's probably impossible to answer this question given the recent announcements of numbers and everything else, but have you been giving any sort of guidelines from government or from anybody about when we can hope to bring limited crowds back?
Not as such at the moment, Reggie. We're planning for, and we have been for a while, for when crowds do come back. So as soon as we get the nod from the government, we will be ready to go. We're looking at possibly maybe something around Christmas would be good. Obviously, all the listeners and that and yourselves know that our Christmas festival is a very big festival for us. So even getting some crowd back in will be great. So we are raring to go for when that does happen. We've got all the plans in place. I think we'll be looking as well, actually to the UK, to some of their test events that have taken place. They held events in Doncaster this week, and there's more lined up. So we're ready to go. But I think what has happened so far has been nothing short of brilliant, that we've been able to get racing going anyway.
Yeah.
With the conditions that we've had in place. There's a lot of screening, a lot of health checks, and you know, the people that do come here, we want to make sure they feel safe. And I think that is what we've achieved.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be anywhere, then a race course is certainly one of the safest to be at the moment.
No doubt about it. Peter?
David, well done, firstly, on getting today up and running. I think horse racing deserves a big pat on the back for the manner in which it's really led the charge for sport, full stop, and getting back up and running. But could you just give the listeners a sense of, okay, there's no crowds there, but there's obviously a lot of people, from grooms to jockeys to, I don't know whether owners or trainers are allowed, owners probably aren't allowed to attend.
No.
Could you just give us a sense of the restrictions and the amount of operations and logistics that goes around making sure that they're transported around the place and into the place safely?
Yeah, absolutely, Peter. Yeah, it's a good question. I think one of the reasons we were able to get back racing and working so quickly was because of the amount of restrictions that we put in place ourselves and the plans we put forward, so that the government could have the confidence in us to actually open and operate. So there was a very large document put together by Horse Racing Ireland in association with the IHRB and then all the various stakeholders about every single part of the race course. It's about a 50-page document, and it breaks down every single area, what has to be in place, what restrictions and what takes place. So just for example, in the stable yard, there's a one-way system for the horses to walk around in the stable yard. They all have to be chipped and checked on the way in, and everybody has to be disinfected. Even sort of things like where you have to keep the doors open so there's no touch points. There's sanitizer stations everywhere. So that's just an example, and that's something which is replicated across the race course. And beforehand as well, there's a very intensive screening process. So everybody who comes to the race day has to answer a questionnaire 24 hours before they attend. And that's every race day. So it's catching people's updates as they go along. And there's questions, for example, have you been abroad? Do you feel unwell? That sort of thing. And that gives you a unique barcode to come in, which is just unique to yourself. And then when you come on the day, you have to get that scanned. Your temperature is taken and you're actually ticked off an official list. We can't go above a certain number. So we have to specify who the people are attending 24 hours in advance. So if at any point you don't do one of those things, you don't get in. And the main thing is the health screening check beforehand. If you haven't done that, that's it. You don't get in. If you don't turn up with a barcode to say you've been screened, that you don't get in. And that's anybody. There's no exceptions here. You could be the T-shirt, you could be the president. And if you haven't done that screening, you don't get in. And that's been quite a tricky thing to start with, because a lot of it is computerized and there's people who aren't perhaps used to that sort of system. And then when we started, there was the restrictions of nobody over 70 allowed in. So that did catch us out to start with. But I think it's been shown that, and the fact we're still able to go, that we've done it so well, we've been so tight, we've fulfilled these out. So those are some of the things. And then when we get to these sort of race meetings, there's the international travel. You know, we've got horses that have come over from the UK and France, and they go through certain restrictions. So their trainers haven't been able to travel. So they're not here. So they have to rely on Irish trainers to look after them. So there's a lot that the whole industry has to do to pull together to make this event this weekend, which is an international weekend, and they've got even more UK runners at the Curragh, so they've done an amazing job to make it happen. So, I mean, everybody's pulled together, and it's great that we've been able to continue.
Yeah, it's wonderful. There's no doubt about it. Like I said, I've seen those protocols in place up there, and it's quite amazing, really. People have no idea the logistical nightmare that's involved, and you're not dealing with just people. You're dealing with animals as well, which throws a whole new mix into it and causes a lot more difficulty. But listen, it's wonderful what you've done. We're all really looking forward. It's going to be a great weekend this weekend, no question about it. Irish Champions weekend. Weather is magnificent as we look outside as well, and the forecast is wonderful. So the very best of luck with it. You have a little bit, did I hear correctly, there's some entertainment going online or something as well? Is there?
Very good. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. So we're actually doing a Londonians Irish Champions weekend like television channel.
Yeah.
So there's guys presenting through the day with various inputs and that and interviews and all those sort of things. And that's, you'll be able to watch that online for free. Even if you haven't got like the likes of Racing TV or anything like that, you get all of the stuff that you would normally get on Racing TV. We're actually producing it for people free of charge, so you'll be able to. It's as good as being here without.
Can people see that?
So if you go to our Facebook page, and if you go to our website letterstown.com, all of the information will be there to go to the Longines Irish Champions Weekend at home. It's called.
Okay.
So it's like your own TV channel there in your home with a little bit more access than what you'd normally get.
Excellent. Wonderful. Okay, well, that's great. That gives us even more things to look forward to. With the weekend that's in it. Okay, David. Listen, been great chatting to you. We'll catch up again
soon.
Guys, good luck with the weekend.
Best luck, David.
Thanks very much indeed. Thank you.
Cheers. Take care. David Atwood, there, operations manager up in Leopardstown Racecourse, does an amazing job up there. Places magnificent, folks. It's just such a pity that we can't get up there to actually enjoy it. But I've been lucky enough to get up there for a sneak preview of what's going on up in the place, and it's absolutely out of this world, the changes that they've made. Beautiful racecourse. Always love it up there. Delighted now to be welcoming back Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers podcast. The season starting off, of course, again in the NFL. This week, started back up on Thursday. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Good, Reg. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Great to have you back. Great to be chatting NFL in these strange times. But it all kicked off on Thursday evening with the Kansas City Chiefs, of course, taking on the Texans. And the Chiefs coming out on top.
Yeah, I mean, we're expecting lots of different things from this season. But then it just appeared like nothing had changed. So, Patrick Mahomes comes out. Does the business, made it look easy. One of the interesting things actually, Reg, and an awful lot of the pundits, and I would have thought as well, is that it's going to be a really sloppy start. It's going to be messy. There's going to be lots of penalties. You know, they're not really going to know what they're doing. There'll be coaches falling over on the sideline. I mean, because an awful lot of these teams, they haven't had OTAs. They haven't had preseason. So that meant that when they were sort of doing up their teams and rosters, the way the NFL works, it's not like soccer where they make a big name signing and they bring them all in and, four people join the locker room and then they crack on. NFL, they have the draft and then they draft in a load of guys, outside of the draft process. And then they have to figure out who's better than who. Veteran players who leave, you have young lads who come through, and it's a bit of a mess. So, your roster gets up to crazy numbers and then you have to cut that all down. So everyone expected this game on Thursday to be kind of a bit messy because you probably experience this in rugby, I guess. You'll sort of know you can't substitute live tackling. So, if you have a long off season and even if you're going through your strength and condition and stuff, Reg, if you're not tackling some fella, well then, not that you forget how to wrap up and, put him on the ground or whatever, but you can be a bit rusty and you take wrong angles and all this kind of stuff. But I tell you what, that game on Thursday was an absolute cracker. There was only one penalty.
Yeah.
And Patrick Mahomes, here's a guy who signed the first $500 million contract in sports history. It's a 10-year, $477 million contract.
Wow.
He's really, really young. I mean, just a revelation from the very start. People want sort of a reminder of this guy, or you're a new fan. Apart from the Packers, this is a good team to watch because Mahomes is a young fella. He's doing we've heard of no-look free kicks and no-look passes in soccer. This guy does no-look passes in NFL, so he's not even looking at the receivers who are being covered closely, and he's banging the ball out to these fellas, which is brilliant. But he took over from a guy called Alex Smith, who was drafted at the same time as the quarterback for my team, the Green Bay Packers, and he was a pretty good quarterback. And in fact, he had his best year ever in Kansas. But then they draft Patrick Mahomes. He comes in after a year and wins the MVP. And you sort of go, well, yeah, that sounds impressive. But to win the NFL MVP with the amount of talent that's there is incredible, especially at the quarterback position. When Reg, to be honest, we've kind of been a little bit underwhelmed by the rookie quarterbacks that have been drafted over the last number of years. Some have done okay, others have went, you know, to the Super Bowl and all the rest. But Patrick Mahomes is a totally different beast. But yes, he's picked up exactly where he left off. And to remind people where he left off, he won the Super Bowl last year. And as well as that, this is a guy, Reg, as well, is that with most quarterbacks, especially young lads like him, is that if he goes down to, you know, 2-3 touchdowns, sometimes that's a little bit too much pressure for these lads to come back from. But Mahomes has shown, especially last season in the playoffs, that he can do it time and again. So it looks like he's still invincible and that you can't touch this guy, which is saying a lot after that massive contract. Well, it's usually after they get paid that they take a bit of a dip off, or something happens. Yeah, exactly.
Well, $47 million a year for 10 years will probably do that. It's good motivation, all right, no question about it.
Yeah.
But it's strange times still all the same with NFL. I mean, there's an awful lot going on in the States, as we know, politically. And the demonstrations have been sort of angering fans. And there was a lot of booing going on in the season opener when some of the players protested at the start of the game, wasn't there?
Yeah, massively disappointing, Rez, to be honest. I mean, look, people can lean different ways and you can be left and right and centre and all this kind of stuff. And people want to go, oh, sports should just be sports. But sports, to me, was never about sports. Reg, you're a sportsman. You have things that matter to you, that are important to you. And I don't think you take kindly to people telling you to just shut up and play sports. It's ridiculous. We're all people. And in fact, I would argue that what makes sports good is the human element to us. You know, like you get into a Champions League final and it's the pressure on those players and who performs, and Messi doing it time and time again on the biggest stage, and the same with Ronaldo's and everything else. So it's the human element that makes sports interesting. So now in the States, I mean, it's going to be political anyway because we're coming into the presidential election and then Donald Trump has the views that he has and everything else. So however you feel about that. But then we have the shooting in Kenosha, which I know we talked about when we did the NBA stuff.
Yeah.
And then George Floyd murder and everything else. And 80% of the players in the NFL are black, so they want to stand up for their rights. They're not looking to be better than anybody else. They're just looking for equal rights. It's very simple. But again, the NFL has always been a league that reacts to things. So we see so many occasions, Reg, where, you know, a story will get leaked on TMZ. And then the NFL will react and go, oh, yeah, that's bad, even though, you know, it comes out that they'd known about it and they never took action. But there's something about seeing it. It's the optics of seeing things happen that make things an awful lot worse. So now we see Roger Goodell on the back foot. He's the commissioner for the NFL, and he's going on all of these programs that are championing black rights and everything else. Yes, he sort of tried to take action against Colin Kaepernick and that whole story when he was kneeling during the national anthem. But on Thursday night's game, as you say, the Texans stayed in the locker room for the anthem. They didn't even come out. Probably to kind of not fan the flames of people, you know, kneeling during the national anthem and all that kind of stuff. But they still came out and they linked arms. The two black quarterbacks, both teams, linked arms on the 50-yard line. And there was boos from the crowd. Now, I watched those videos and one of the things that was shouted was just play football. So it's amazing the way people can compartmentalize, you know, a black athlete going out and performing and entertaining and doing one-handed catches and everything else. But when it comes to that same black man wanting rights and equal rights and protesting against police brutality, well, then the people are like, oh, I don't want to hear from you, just play ball. So there's a massive ick factor there with someone doing that and being able to do that. And I just don't understand. But sure, look, with the Packers, every time they put out a press conference, you'll have someone saying, oh, I'm a fan of 50 years, and if you're going to protest, I'm not going to watch any games anymore. And my response would be, this is not an airport. You don't need to tell us about your departure. Just leave. You know what I mean? Don't be telling people you're not going to watch the game.
Oh, but that's just my stance on it. It's a tricky one, all right. There's no question about it. But I suppose, like everything, people reach a saturation point too. So maybe there's reasons with that as well. But getting away from the protest side of things, how are they going to manage to open safely? I mean, what are the protocols that have been put in around COVID? Because as we know, America has been absolutely battered with COVID.
Yeah, it's a petri dish over there, all right. I mean, it's pretty dangerous. I mean, you look at the NBA, and we spoke about it last week, where they had these sort of pods and, you know, the safe zone that they sent them down to Orlando. There's none of that in the NFL. They're still traveling around, but they've severely limited the amount of people around the team because you wouldn't believe the amount of logistics that goes into an NFL team. You know,
just look at the sideline, you can see it's supposed to be 100 people standing there.
Yeah, sure. Even Sean McVay with the Rams, he employed a person, right, that just walks behind him and pulls him out of the way of the refs because he can get a penalty for it. So if you've got a person like employed to pull you out of the way of a referee, you know, you've got an awful lot of staff members. But what they're doing is they're not letting a whole lot of fans in. They had some fans for that Thursday night game, but they had them in little pods. and there was only a couple of thousand people there, which is a massive deal for some of these teams. If you look at my team, Green Bay, they're a really small community, and an awful lot of the, you know, businesses around the arena really depend on gate receipts and people coming in and spending money and drinking at the bars and buying the merch and everything else. So they're not going to have fans in Green Bay for any of the home, for the first two home games, anyway, for sure. So they're going to be pumping in crowd noise, which we've seen with the NFL, so that's not all that strange. There's talk about stadiums putting up those sort of cardboard cutouts. Some of the team personnel, they have to take tests, you know, really, really regularly, and some of them have to have tracking devices put on them to make sure that they're not sort of, you know, going places that they shouldn't go. And then we saw as well, even the head coaches, so Andy Reid, the head coach of the Chiefs, he was wearing one of those visors, you know, where you either wear the mask or the visor. So he was wearing a visor, Reg, and it was like, it's like your shower screen. When you have a shower, it just fogged up and got moisture on it. So he's trying to look at his playbook and he can't even see. Yeah, it's really, really interesting times with all of the sort of limited fan participation and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's going to be empty stadiums and personnel.
It will be, but of course with the TV audiences, they'll make that up. Okay, we're running short on time. I want to just get into your ACCA this week. You've picked a few teams for us there, so give us a run through of that.
I'll give you a run through. It's good odds, but sometimes good odds is bad odds because you put money down. But anyway, it's a 7-1 shot. And we haven't seen the teams yet. So again, caveat, bear in mind, we'll have to wait a couple of weeks to see how teams are actually doing. So here we go. Baltimore Ravens. I think those to beat the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
The San Francisco 49ers, incredibly strong team, that they're going to beat the Arizona Cardinals. My Green Bay Packers to beat the Minnesota Vikings. They go to Minnesota, so they're the underdogs, and I'm picking them for obvious reasons. So there's the caveat. And then the Carolina Panthers to beat the Las Vegas Raiders. Again, the Panthers are actually the underdogs in that, but they have Christian McCaffrey, and I think he's the X factor. So the 7-1, 5 are down, 41 back, at your own peril, of course.
Okay, excellent stuff. And just give me your sort of game of the week, weekend as such, maybe Sunday, Monday or Tuesday. Who would you pick out as the game of those?
Yeah, really interesting one. The one to watch, it's on TV on Sky, special channel. It's at 9:15. It's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the New Orleans Saints. And why is it? It's because Tom Brady is kidding out for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, his New England Patriots with Cam Newton are on at 5:00 before that. That's also going to be a cracking game. But I'm interested to see how Tom Brady does in Tampa Bay. And he's coming up against Drew Brees of the Saints. So that's two heavyweights. So that's going to be an absolutely great game.
Excellent stuff. And just very quickly, seeing as it is week one, who do you see as being the strongest candidates at the start of the season to win it?
Yeah, you can't get past the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. It looks like they've picked up. They made it look easy, to be honest with you. Outside of them, it's the usual, Baltimore Ravens. The New Orleans Saints are pretty strong as well. And again, if Tom Brady comes out and performs like he should perform, because he's got an unbelievable amount of weapons, then he could do the business there as well. But look, it's totally blown open. I've heard one of the executives say is that with no preseason or training camp or anything else, the teams that are going to do best at the start of the season, Reg, are going to be the teams that did their whole virtual stuff really well. And also, don't count out the fact that this season could be cut short with COVID. So all of these early games, who comes out to a good start, if the season is cut short, these could find their way into the playoffs where they might have petered out by the end of the season.
Very true.
So absolutely fascinating stuff.
Excellent stuff, Stephen. As always, we'll chat to you next week. Really looking forward to that and looking forward to seeing how it all unfolds this weekend. Mind yourself.
Indeed. Thanks, Reg.
All the best, Stephen O'Brien there of UK Packers Podcast, giving us his thoughts on the weekend. And just quickly, his ACCA is the Baltimore Ravens against the Cleveland Browns. He's going for Baltimore. San Francisco to beat Arizona. Green Bay Packers to beat Minnesota. And the Carolina Panthers to beat the Las Vegas Raiders. We're going to take a break now. We still have rugby, football and GAA to come on the show. Okay, so it's our magic moment time now. And with the week that's in it, with the Tour de France being high up on the agenda for Irish listeners and Irish lives, we are looking back now at the wonderful 1987 Tour de France win by Stephen Roach. Let's have a little listen to a memory of that.
And 17 seconds later, the main field came home with Stephen Roach in the centre of the pack, waving to the crowd. At last, he'd done what he promised. He'd won the Tour de France. And so Stephen Roach of Ireland wins the Tour de France. The time, 115 hours, 27 minutes, 42 seconds. Just 40 seconds in front of Delgado.
Now you, my friend, won only moments ago, won the Tour de France. You have the yellow jersey. Has it hit you yet what it means?
Well, it actually hit me once when I was on the podium when they played the Irish National Anthem, because it's a long time since I heard it, and normally you only play it on big occasions, so I think it must be a big occasion.
This is definitely a big occasion. You are the first Irish winner ever.
Yes, but I think that's not really the purpose. The feat of the thing, I think, is to win the Tour de France. First Irishman or whatever, it doesn't mean a thing, really.
I don't know what it goes so far as that. I have to say, Peter, I'd remember it better than you, being a bit older, but I have to say it was incredible at the time. You know, I mean, it didn't seem like something an Irishman could do, because you were, you know, cycling, it was different. It was different times to now, for example. Cycling was a very popular sport, but there was nothing like what you see now. I mean, nowadays there's cyclists everywhere on the roads. You can't go out at a weekend without running into a few mammals.
Middle-aged men in Lycra, yeah, all over the country lanes.
Everywhere. And, you know, it's everywhere. But at the time, it wasn't. I mean, it was very specifically around cycling. I know a good friend of mine, Shay Colgan, he was involved with the Bray Wheelers, and cycling there had, you know, there was great interest in Bray around that time. They had a great cycling club, but not every town did, or it wasn't all that popular throughout the thing, but throughout the country. But when you look at Stephen Roach and what he achieved, it really resonated. I suppose it was a real feel good around the whole country for that.
Yeah, well, it was an extraordinary year, 1987. I was 7 years old, so I can remember bits and pieces from it, but I do remember it was such a big achievement to be. He was only the fifth cyclist in history to win the Tour and the Giro d'Italia in the same year.
Mm.
And he was also the only Irishman to win the Tour de France. And I can remember Irish Taoiseach then, Charles Saughey, joined Roach on the podium in the Champs-Élysées. And of course, he
never missed an opportunity
his way in to get part of the conversation and get part of history. But it's, yeah, that was a golden era when you. I don't know really enough about Irish cycling to really go into it in depth, but I certainly remember Paul Kimmage and Sean Kelly, as well as Stephen Roach early. There was a lot of talented cyclists around that time.
There was.
And just the sheer physical strain that it puts on your body, mentally, physically, to come through that kind of punishment and to win and to be so consistent over such a long period in the French summer as well.
Yeah, and but there was racing, like the milk race it used to be called
milk
back
Ross,
then,
yeah,
and,
Ross,
and
yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
Ross Telton and stuff.
Yeah, and we, I remember a stage even going through later Bray of the Tour de France. Like, I mean, there has been historically a big link with Ireland and cycling, but you still didn't feel that a country like this could achieve victory in winning it the way that Stephen did. And I think that's what just made it such an amazing achievement. And also just because it was just such a hellish event. I mean, it went on forever. And I think, what did he say in the thing there, 116 hours of riding or something like that? It's just, but it was non-stop. And I remember reading Paul's book, and it was a fantastic read, Rough Ride, you know, about the endurance and the difficulty of just dragging yourself out of bed in the morning and trying to compete in that race. Horrendous stuff. Like, I mean, there was torture on their bodies, absolute torture on their bodies. But I suppose, you know, for us to see someone like Stephen Roach, and Kelly was always the kind of the one there that you probably thought Kelly would do it before Roach, you know, that was kind of going on as well, because there was that huge rivalry going on between them. But it was an amazing achievement, and it was just something that really struck home at the time.
Yeah, and I suppose in terms of wider Irish society at that time, the economy was just coming out of a really tough 80s. You know, you had Euro 88 and that excitement coming up the following year. So U2 were on the top of their game, you know, in music. So Irish society and Irish culture was just beginning to evolve and just beginning to, you know, stick out their chest a little bit more. And I suppose Stephen Roach's one resonated because here was a local man who probably did a lot of work and a lot of hard work overseas to kind of hone his craft and then to... And what is one of the largest... globally watched events in the world, and is every year, irrespective of the challenges that cycling has faced in terms of all the controversies over the years. So that tells you a lot, as well as the incredible beautiful scenery of France and all the provincial towns and cities. So it's still a very special treasured Irish sporting moment. Probably doesn't get the credit that like the major golf successes or Ken winning the World Championship, the football, rugby, Gaelic. But it was a massive, massive achievement, and certainly something that hopefully has inspired his son, Nicholas, as well as now Sam Bennett this week. And let's hope that Sam can push on and have an amazing career, because it's great that people talk about all kinds of sports, and cycling is a minority sport in Ireland, and but it's obviously high participation as well recreationally. Mm. So let's hope that will inspire a new generation as well.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. Well, that is Stephen Roach's win in the Tour de France in 1987, and that is our major moment in sport for this week. Okay, we're going to turn our attention now to rugby, and of course, huge event going on in the Aviva Stadium tonight at 7:45 as Leinster take on Ulster in the final of that Pro 14 after some heroics last week from Ulster to get themselves into contention, and that last minute penalty kick from Ian Madigan as he nailed it with the nerves of steel that he had and stuck that one over and got a place in the final for Ulster when it really didn't look like they were going to make it to that point. But they're going to be up against it again tonight with a very strong Leinster team. Unusual, of course, behind closed doors. But Peter, it's a cracking game. Delighted for us, I suppose, to have an all-Irish final. It's a wonderful thing to see. And Ulster, you know, they've been accused by me and by many others of not being underachievers in recent years and not, you know, getting any silverware. And I suppose this game for them, it's the repercussions from it are enormous. They really, really have to try and get across the line for once and for all against arguably what are the best team in Europe at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny. Ulster have kind of snuck up the inside rail and they're on the last bend now, coming if you're to give it a horse racing analogy. But I think Leinster have the pedigree to really edge back ahead and take home the title. In saying that, we shouldn't discount the achievement that Ulster fulfilled in winning in Edinburgh last week. It was an extraordinary show of nerve from Ian Madigan. It was a couple of brave calls from Dan McFarland as coach to take off Cooney when he did, and to bring on Madigan. And obviously that's continued on to selection this week. I'd imagine if John Cooney is a pretty upset guy at not making the starting 15, which is, I suppose, it's fairly standard when it comes to sport. But John Cooney has been so influential for Ulster over a long period consistently. So Albie Mathewson comes in, and I think that is the most single biggest eye-catching selection, certainly from the Ulster point of view. I think Sean Reedy coming on for Geordie Murphy played a massive role as well last week when Geordie picked up an injury. And when you look at it, you know, we've often spoke about the cross-pollination of Leinster players moving around the provinces, and like there's six ex-Leinster players on the Ulster bench, and I think the bench is where most eyes are being drawn now when the teams were announced. I think you look at Leinster, you've quality of Luke McGrath, you've Ed Byrne who's been in flying form, Jonathan Sexton, Scott Fardy, like there's a huge amount of talent there and resources for Leinster to call on. And, you know, and some people are kind of discussing and saying, well, you know, you're kind of taking the eye off the ball and you're looking towards it next week. I'm looking at the players who didn't make this 23. I'm looking at Rob Kearney. I'm looking at Max Deegan, who's seemed to have played nearly every match this year, who doesn't make the 23. Ross Byrne, I'd have no concerns about his temperament in a game like this today. And it's going to be a great opportunity for a number of players, and I'm really excited to see how Van der Fleer, James Ryan is back, which is good. It's great that Ian Henderson is back to captain Ulster as well. So I imagine Andy Farrell, hopefully he got one of these coveted 200 tickets to get into the Aviva Stadium to have a look at the game. And I'm sure he'll be really, really excited to see how both teams lock down. And I think, you know, you can probably draw a line under the Saracens game next week. All eyes and all focus is on tonight. And it'll be good reward, I think, for Leinster and for their consistency to win the title. But good reward doesn't count for a huge amount.
Mm, interesting to see the bench for Ulster as well. I mean, from a Leinster point of view, Jack McGrath, Marty Moore, Geordie Murphy, John Cooney, Ian Madigan, all coming from the blue side and having to move on and find their trade in other places and find themselves back now at Ulster. What do you make of the Billy Burns at out half for Ulster and Ian Madigan? I mean, if you're going to argue that John Cooney's form wasn't quite there, so that he's gone with Albie Mathewson at nine, which, you know, as a coach is prerogative and that's the way he sees it. Could there be the same argument perhaps for Madigan coming in at 10? Although I know Billy Burns is very, very highly rated.
Yeah, well, you look at it, Billy Burns captained the team, I think, couple of weeks back. So that shows the kind of leadership role he has within it. The fact that Ulster have gone for a 6-2 bench with six forwards would indicate that Ian Madigan's flexibility is going to be very important, and the fact that Cooney can kick as well. So if both out halves pick up an injury, you've got the flexibility there with John Cooney, who's a very talented athlete anyway. So you know, you'd imagine he can box off a couple of positions if he needed to. And that attritional nature, it's funny with John Cooney. John Cooney has now been involved in three Leinster-Ulster finals, and he won't have started any of them. 2012 Heineken Cup final, Isaac Boss picked up an injury in the warm-up. He was an injury doubt going into that. Cooney makes the bench. Leinster hammer Ulster. The following year, Leinster beat, if you remember, Shane Jennings inspired Ulster in the RDS to win the league. And now here, so I'd say Cooney is probably scratching his head now, wondering what's kind of going on every time this game comes up. But it's exciting, and I think the capability that's there. You've mentioned Madigan. I think what McFarland is going to be looking for is impact. He's going to be looking for, like, Madigan has proved his temperament last week, but this is an entirely different kettle of fish. He'll be coming up against Ross Byrne. He could be coming up against Jonathan Sexton as well. So when you know each other so intrinsically, as these players do, that, you know, the small gains and the small little nuances and the small flicks and moves and feigns and all that kind of activity that goes on during a game could be quite crucial, and they'll know each other inside out. It'll come down to talent and it'll come down to temperament. I just can't see, and I'm not trying to be rub up our Ulster brethren the wrong way, but I just can't see an area where Ulster are overly dominant over Leinster. That doesn't mean that Leinster are better than across every
Well, I mean, I know what you're trying to say, but you can't gloss it up. I mean, we have respect for Ulster, but the facts remain. When you look at that Leinster backline, it's quite terrifying as an opposition. If you were on the other side, Jordan Larmour, Hugo Keenan, Gary Ringrose, Robbie Henshaw, James Lowe, Ross Byrne and Jameson Gibson-Park, and a bench that can be brought on to add to it. And I know there's been all sorts of chat during the week about Ross Byrne and Johnny Sexton, and even people talking about disrespect for the opposition and the competition by not picking Johnny Sexton. But the fact is, you know, Ross Byrne is playing fantastic rugby and has been for a long, long time for Leinster, and is going to be the replacement to Johnny at some stage in the future. So, I mean, I don't see it as disrespectful, but that backline is terrifying, absolutely terrifying, if they unleash it and if they get it going. I have to say, I felt, and I don't think Leinster fans would be disagreeing with too much, and I don't think Leo or the coaches, I didn't think it was the best performance from Leinster last week against Munster. I think that they were a far better side than what was offered up against them. The game plan that was going up against them from a Munster point of view was very predictable, very boring, not really much inventiveness in it, an awful lot of kicking of the ball away. It didn't seem to be any sort of a plan B, and I didn't think from a Leinster point of view they took advantage of that. I think that there's an awful lot more in the tank that Leinster could have, and I think when they go and they do their analysis, they probably will be disappointed with their performance against Munster. But it's a win, and they're in the final. But I expect it to ramp up this week.
Look, Leinster have not shown their hand in these last couple of weeks, and Ulster should be terrified really about that, because when you look at the selections now, there's so many headaches for that team. Like, Ulster went through a hugely attritional game last Saturday night. Leinster have an extra day, which does count for something. They've the ability to freshen up and not noticeably weaken their starting 15, and that's a process that the coaches have built in over not just one season, it's over two and three seasons. So who we would deem as relatively inexperienced players, Hugo Keenan, he's still got 16 caps. You know, James Ryan still got 37 caps, Doris 31. Like, these are really talented players. Hugo Keenan was a real revelation last week. It was so exciting to see him as a winger come through now and really, you know, step up to that opportunity.
Yeah.
So you would feel that the squad rotation will be less of an effect for Leinster. You still have to go out and perform, but
it looks so powerful, that pack, doesn't it? I mean, with the likes of Keane and Andrew Porter in the front row alongside Ronan Kelleher, a second row combination like James Ryan and Ian Henderson, to the both of their credit, getting back from such bad injuries is the only way to describe it, to make it for this final. Okay, we don't know what their form will be like because they've been out injured, so it's a bit of an unknown, but they're both such quality players, you'd imagine they'll bring it. But, I mean, Devon Toner and James Ryan in a second row, what a line-out combination, not to mention a back row of Caelan Doris, Ashwan de Fleer and Jack Conan. I mean, they're all superstars in their own right. Like, it's daunting, you know, when you sit down. I always try and look at it as if I was on the opposition and I'm looking at what I'm playing against, and you would be going, where are the weaknesses? Where can we pick it out? Now, I know you have to perform on the day, but it does feel like it's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle for Ulster. And they'll love me to hear me saying that. They'll love to have that underdog tag coming into it. But the fact remains, they're going to have to play at an incredibly high level for the whole game, and that includes the bench, to overturn this Leinster team.
Yeah, and I think, look, the interesting thing with Leinster, you know, they've got Saracens next week in the Champions League quarterfinal, so Leinster's season won't be defined by this game. So if it doesn't work out, like, I'm scratching my head, I'm looking at the Guinness Pro.
See, I'm not so sure
Guinness
if
I... Pro 14. No, but like, Leinster haven't been a team that's defined by the European victories.
No,
and
I know.
And they've been so consistent.
I know, but I think it's all about silverware. I know you're not defining teams by it, but every victory counts. Every piece of silverware counts. And you can say that the tournament is not as strong as the Champions Cup, and that's fully acceptable. But it is their domestic league, and you do need to win your domestic competition. So...
this will be the third in a row potentially if Leinster win.
Yeah,
and Leo Cullen has still never won the Coach of the Year. And
yeah, but their records that you need to get, you know, you can't afford to slip up on them just because you have won it before, you know, that sort of way.
No, but my point is, yeah, Ulster may not be back in this point again. You kind of get the feeling with Leinster that they're not going to lose a huge amount of players outside of this starting 23.
Oh, absolutely not.
Over the next period.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking, you know, the recognition. Leinster only get 3 players in the Pro 14 team of the season. Odd. Very odd, considering that they've won every game.
I wasn't aware of that. That's
Richard Cockrell is named Coach of the Year. Leo Cullen hasn't won it in the last 3 years. I'm just scratching my head wondering who comes up with these decisions. You know, but it's just the recognition. Leo Cullen has never been a player or a person who's ever sought claim or fame or recognition. But I just think he's the greatest secret that Irish rugby has probably never really told. Yeah. You consider what he did as a player, as a captain, and how well he's respected across the world. And I think he deserves so much credit as well for steering this ship. Obviously, Stuart Lancaster, Felipe Contepomi, Robin McBride, Emmett Farrell, all the people behind it, Hugh Hogan in the setup, deserve credit. But I tell you something, for a guy just to come fairly seamlessly into coaching after such an illustrious career, and to maintain that quality, it's not just winning matches, it's the manner in which they win. They can be down and dirty, or they can be stylish and skillful.
Well, in my opinion on Leo, I agree with absolutely everything you've said, but I think what makes Leo so successful, and you know, the champion that he is in across all of the levels that you spoke of, he has never, whether it be as a player, a captain or a coach, been afraid to seek the advice and help of others.
Yeah.
And to put people in positions of power around him to make decisions and advise him on those decisions. Very, very hard for whether it be coaches or business leaders to actually put people around you that could effectively take over from you.
Like, well, it shows great confidence in yourself. Yeah. And I think, you know, they weren't afraid to go and look for Graham Henry to come over and do a stint with the club. Wayne Smith, the same, the New Zealand coach. So all the time,
it takes a lot not to be intimidated, like Leo.
But it's confidence in yourself as well, doesn't it?
And it
just shows. But that illustrates Leo, and you're looking at it today. Gary Ringrose captains the team, so maybe that's a nod to the future about the kind of leadership. But he's not the only leader coming through, as you say, James Ryan, Dan Levy, all these players who are going to be around
for a long
time. Jack Conan,
Doris,
exactly.
Van der Fleer.
They're all leaders.
Connors on the bench. They're absolutely. But I think that's been the secret to Leinster, though. You know, everybody's a leader. You know, it's not just the captain, it's all the players are leaders. So, look, it's going to be a really interesting final. There's no question about it. I'm really looking forward to it. I can't see beyond Leinster. I know I've got blue shades on as always, but it's just more logic than anything else. But I really do hope that it's a quality game. I think it will be. But I, you know, I just feel that Leinster are going to come out on top, because they're just, at the moment, they're just too strong. And it's not just for what's going on here in Ireland. They're too strong for most things in Europe at the moment. So it'll be an interesting prequel to what happens next week as well in that Champions Cup. We will review that next week, of course. We're going to have to leave it there, because I've run out of time on rugby. As always, I'd love to keep talking about it all day, but I've got to make room for the GAA and for Alan Cawley as well. Time to turn our attention to GAA now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Declan Drake. Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Very well, Rogers. Your good self?
Oh, wonderful, thank you. Looking at that beautiful sunshine, and the forecast is good for the next 4 or 5 days. So we're looking forward to that. And there's plenty of great sport to look forward to as well. None more so than the hurling and football, of course, that's going on this weekend. But last week, we saw the semi-finals of the hurling, and Coola getting the job done, beating Lucan 117 to 13 points.
They did, as most pundits, I think, in fairness, would have expected, Reg, to be honest with you. But the big factor in this win, I think, was the experience of Coola, you know, that they've built up over the last couple of years in their county title wins and ultimately their back-to-back All-Ireland club wins as well. Didn't play particularly well in the first half, came out stronger in the second half, and the introduction of Colin Cronin was a big factor in the victory. At the start of the year, you know, Willie Marr and the boys out there in Dalkey were ultimately determined to get back to the county final. They felt after the quarter final in some circles that perhaps they were written off a little bit unfairly. And certainly in the second half last week, they set down a marker that they're back in the final and they mean business, and they're a good prospect perhaps for back-to-back titles. We'll have to wait and see next Sunday.
Absolutely. Last 10 minutes, they scored 1-6 to 1 point, and that was basically the difference between the two sides in the end. Those 8 points that were scored in that last 10 minutes, so finishing very strong.
Yeah, finishing very strong, and you know, when you have the opportunities early in games against teams like Coola, Reg, you have to take them. It's as simple as that, because they don't do panic. You know, they'll keep plugging away, working away, creating the opportunities, and when push comes to shove, they tend to do most of the shoving.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, they're going to be coming up against Ballyboden. They managed to beat Nafina, and again, in that last 20 minutes is when Ballyboden came strongest, scoring 1-7 in that last 20 minutes of the game, and I think, you know, showing their superior fitness and strength in that area. So you're talking about two teams who are in their prime coming into that final.
Yeah, I think a lot of the things you said about the Coola game, you could say about the Bowden game as well, to be honest with you, you know, and the point about experience was a key one as well in the victory. And, you know, Joe Fortune has been out there on the Fairhouse Road now for the last 12 months planning this meticulously, and it's going according to plan at the moment. And he'd be absolutely delighted to be back in the county final, and there'll be skin and hair flying at Parnell Park at 4:30 next Sunday afternoon. I think at the start of the year, if you ask people who they thought would be in the county final, most people, or a lot of people anyway, probably would have said these two. Other people might have had Kilmacud Crokes in the mix as well, including myself, I would have to say, for a large degree of this championship. That hasn't happened. I think we have two best teams in the county next Sunday, and really looking forward to what should be a fantastic occasion.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, yeah, we'll see what happens with that and which way it goes. But this weekend, of course, it's the semi-final tie in the football, and it's all throw-in at 5:30. It all starts in Parnell Park with Ballyboden taking on St. Jude's, and this will be a real cracker as well.
Yeah, they've split the semi-finals up, one today, as you say, at 5:30, and the other one tomorrow. Yeah, Bowden, you know, defending champions, really showed their mettle in their quarter-final win over Raheny, Reg, after extra time. Didn't play that well, but look, champions have a dogged determination about them, and their quality got them through. They played 4 games in the championship so far this year and scored 15 goals, 69 points. You know, when you've the likes of the Basquels and Conal Keeney and the vastly experienced Eki O'Mahony to come in as well, you're not going to be too far away from it. So Anthony Rainbow will be thrilled to have his charges back in the county final next week.
I was looking at the...
Or 2 weeks' time, I should say, sorry.
Absolutely. Just looking at the little bit of the stats on it, it's quite amazing that in the 4 games to date, Bowden, they've managed to score 15 goals and 69 points.
Yeah.
In their build-up to that. Jude's have a lot less than that in 4 goals and 51, but it's some scoring all the same from Bowden.
It is some scoring, but a point on Jude's, I mean, they were in the final 2 years ago themselves, you know, and they keep coming back to the well year after year in search of the Holy Grail, you know. Yeah. They mightn't be scoring as freely as what Bowden would be, but if you look at the other side of the ledger, if you like, Reg, they've only conceded 134.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the best defensive record in the competition so far. So Bowden are going to have to work very, very hard for their scores. But look, if the likes of Kevin McMenamin and Niall Coakley can
get anywhere near the pace of it this evening, they'll certainly put it up to Bowden. But being honest with you, I would still expect that Bowden will be in the county final after today's game. Okay. Be close.
Okay, very good. Well, again, another juicy one, as you mentioned, is going on Sunday. That's throwing at 4:30 as Ballymun Kickhams take on Kilmacud. Which way do you see that going?
Well, the first thing I think is it's a game worthy of being the final, to be honest with you. It really is. You know, you have two massive heavyweights here going toe-to-toe. Ballymun have been flying through the championship, you know, powered by their inter-county stars, Dean Rock, Jamesy McCarthy, the Small Brothers have been quite prominent as well. But they've been a team, Reg, who haven't really delivered entirely on their pedigree, you know, in terms of winning the championship. Can they do it tomorrow against Crokes? Going to be very, very tough. They were champions, of course, in 2018. They've been particularly impressive in this championship, not least the last day ending the aspirations of St. Vincent's. So I would take a 50-cent piece out of my pocket, toss it in the air and see which way it lands on this one, to be honest with you. It's going to be very, very close. But a tentative vote, perhaps, for Crokes just to come through.
Very good. Okay. Don't forget that is live on Dubs TV as well. Bowden against St. Jude's, Nave, Marnaug and St. Bridges and Coolin, Templeogue, Sing Street, they'll be on that as well. So you can buy a 3-game pass for €18 on Dubs TV. So well worth checking that out as well, so that you can have plenty to look at. And of course, the ladies are on this weekend as well.
Yeah, indeed, Reg. It's a massive day today out in the Fingallion GA Club in Swords. At 4:00, you'll have the final of the Ladies Senior Football Championship. Foxhock Cabinteely going for 6 in a row against the team they beat in last year's final, Kilmacud Crokes, who are searching for their very first title. So, again, there's not an awful lot between these two teams. If you look at their run in the semi-final, particularly Crokes beating Athena 4:15 to 2:12, Foxrock beat Bowden 4:13 to 3:10. So Crokes scored 2 more points than Foxrock, but they conceded a point less. So it's going to be very, very close out there this afternoon. Again, like the men's semi-finals that are on today, you have an array of inter-county talent in both sides. Throwing it at 4:00. And of course, unfortunately, due to the restrictions we have at the moment, no supporters are allowed, but the game will be streamed live on the Dublin Ladies Facebook, or not Facebook, YouTube page, I should say, this afternoon. Lindsay Davey and myself providing the commentary for that, so really looking forward to that occasion. And the best of luck to both Foxrock and Kilmacud this afternoon.
Wonderful stuff, that's great. Okay, Declan, thanks again, as always. Really look forward to all that's going on this weekend in both the semi-finals and with the ladies as well. So you enjoy your weekend, enjoy that glorious sunshine out there, and long may it last.
And Alayla Blue tonight.
Absolutely. Okay, take care of yourself and stay safe. Talk to you
Cheers,
soon.
Cheers, Reg, take care.
All the best, Declan Drake there, giving us all the info on the GA. Now delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Morning, Al, how are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you? Are you okay?
I'm very good, thanks. Really, really good form. Cracking day here and plenty of good sport to look forward to this weekend. So always good when that's happening. And there was plenty happening last night as well. Waterford getting what some might think was quite a surprising result against Bowes in John Sheridan's last match in charge before he departs. Declan Drake actually caught up with John Sheridan after the match last night. Let's have a little listen to what he had to say.
No, I've considered everything's happened regarding the Wigan job. Everything from Wednesday onwards has just come very quickly for me. I was just focusing on the game tonight. I was never going to... I never thought about going and just leaving the game and let Franny take the game. I wanted to take the game. I wanted to see how we'd play against it, because I knew these two bowls. I was looking forward to these two games, Bowls and Shamrock, to test ourselves. So I was always focused on the game. Obviously, I've got other things in the back of my mind, but it's just come out of time, so I've just got to try and get to Wigan for the weekend, yeah.
John, it's a huge challenge at Wigan, you know, the position that the club is in.
Yeah,
have you had an opportunity yet to speak to the likes of Paul Cook about it? Or?
Paul Cook played a big part in me getting the job, so... I know Paul very well, and other people who've put my name forward. They're in a difficult position. Whether I'm the right man for the job, I don't know, but they're in difficult times. They're losing the best players, and they just need to try and stabilise. It's difficult for the players as well, obviously, supporters and what have you in the mess they're in at the moment. It's not the players' fault or the supporters. It's other people who've caused that. They were a championship middle of the table last season. They were magnificent, so I've just got to go in there and work with the staff who were there, and if I can put my stamp on and try and improve him and try and achieve and do well in the league, we'll wait and see.
How would you best describe your experience, short as it was, in our league overall now, John?
Well, it's difficult times, isn't it? So even the big everyone talk, everyone's been talking. Obviously, me calling it a pub league. I've just explained there. I never ever called it a pub league. What I said is, I shouted out. I think it was Ali Koo. I says, Ali, you're making decisions. What you would see in a pub league. That weren't called. I would never disrespect. I'll tell you why I come over to Ireland, because I know the people. I love the people. My family are all Irish, the friendliest people in the world for me, and they proved that people in and around me at Waterford. I knew the league has got a good standard. I've got lots of players who play in this league who've played for me. Your Jack Burns and Burks and can't remember his name at right back for Dundalk. Sorry, Callum. Callum, yeah. Good quality players. So the team's playing in Europe. So I would never disrespect any. I wouldn't have come in the first place if I thought it was a pub league. So I've come over here. I've enjoyed it 100%, 100%. It's difficult and it's different to what I'm used to. But the standard is very, very good. Very competitive. Very. And you have to stand up for yourself. And this is why the young players who we got in the team, you have to push them and work hard. Because if you want to compete with Dundalk and Shamrock and Bowes, you have to be at it. If you switch off, you get beat. And that's why we had to be on top of our game, 95%. Can't be 70% because we'd lose every week. So you have to push them to get 95%, 100% if you can. And if we do like and perform, we're an all right team. The players have been absolutely brilliant. They've been brilliant. The work ethic is top drawer.
Yeah, work ethic is top drawer. I really respect the players. Just can't remember their names, unfortunately. But anyway, what do you make of that, Al? I mean, like, you know, I suppose it's a great result for him and that Waterford team going and getting victory in Bowes. But from a Bowes perspective, they'll be devastated because that's one that they would have probably felt they could have taken advantage of. But what do you make of that interview there?
Yeah, halfway through it, I was thinking of saying that it was a good interview, Reggie. But then, as you said, I can't remember the lad's name. So yeah. That wasn't a good sign when he can't even remember the lad's name that he played with. But to be fair to John Sheridan, at least he came out and clarified the comments that he made, Reggie. That's what we were all calling for I suppose, the couple of days after he was alleged to have said this. So I'm glad that he came out and clarified it.
Yeah.
And to be fair to him, I hadn't heard anyone say that he had said it either. It was only Vinny that had said it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of between them, and that's why we were saying, we were asking for John Sheridan to come out and clarify it. Now he has, and just move on, Reggie, you know.
Absolutely.
To be fair to him. And as he said himself, I don't think he would have came across if he felt it was a pub league. Obviously, he's moved back now because an opportunity has come up in the UK for him with a bigger club. But I don't think he would have come over here had he felt it was a pub league. Yeah. And by no means, as we said at the time, is it a pub league. And I think, I was at the match tonight that he was supposedly have said this. He is very vocal on the line, and I had said that to you the couple of days after we spoke. And he does come out with a lot, and he's fairly demanding and puts a lot on the players. So I could see him saying the comment that he had said to the lad, Ali Koo, to be fair.
Absolutely,
and we might have been disrespectful to Waterford as well, because as you said, Reggie, they should have went up last night and everybody thinking Bowes would beat them. But they've actually had a really good season, and John Sheridan has done really well since he's come in, to be fair to him, and they've a good side and a good team. I'm actually a little bit disappointed that he is leaving, because it would have been interesting to see where he could have taken this group of players or how well they could have done towards the end of the season, because, as you say, it was a brilliant result to beat Bohemians. And they won fairly comfortable as well. I watched the match. They were comfortable enough in the game, and they could have actually won by more. They hit the post and the crossbar in the second half as well. So it was a great result for them. They're sitting in third position. It's a good opportunity now for whoever comes in, because there's a real opportunity of Waterford finishing in that top four, which is exactly what they'd be looking for, you know.
Yeah, Bowes will be devastated by that loss, though. They would have felt that was a real opportunity. They're sitting there 5 points behind Rovers now. Rovers with a game in hand, of course, after that game last night. So they have a chance to push on.
Yeah, and it was a disappointing result, not only for Bowes, but for the league in general as well, Reggie, because even though it looks like Shamrock Rovers are going to win it, and they're obviously a very good side, you don't want to see them run away with it or win it too early. And we were hoping Bowes, because of what was going on in Dundalk in recent weeks, we were hoping that Bowes might put it up to them towards the, like, as much, for as long as they could, really, even though they lost to them last week. And if they had to win last night, it would have went back to 2 points. But obviously they slipped up, as you say, and Shamrock Rovers now have the game in hand, which, if they win that, it goes up to 8 points. And it is looking like they're going to win the league, Shamrock Rovers, which for us, I don't think we're going to see a title race. But for them, they'll be absolutely over the moon, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's been a while coming. And I think, you know, there's a lot of fans who would be delighted with that. I suppose Dundalk and Bowes haven't given up on it yet. Dundalk had a good match last night. Some cracking goals in that one against Shelburne.
I watched this as well. It was a great game for the neutral to watch, because they went 2-0 up after 10 minutes, Reggie, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, maybe normal service has resumed with Dundalk and they're back to themselves after what has gone on over the last 3 or 4 weeks. But to be fair to Shelburne, they showed a lot of character to come back into the game, because most times anyone that goes 2-0 down in Oriel Park over recent seasons, they would throw the towel in. But Shelburne fought and they got back, got themselves back into the game, albeit with a soft penalty. But you have to take advantage of that sometimes, and they drew themselves level at 2-2, and the game was in the balance then. And to be fair to Dundalk, though, they came out in the second half and they got that winning goal, which, as you say, was an absolute cracker from Greg Sloggett. It was just important for them to get back to winning ways, Reggie. And the new manager, obviously, in place there, he's had a bit of time over the last couple of weeks to work with them. So it was just important that they get back to winning ways, however that may come. So I'm sure he's delighted with just the win, and they'll hope to kick on from here now.
Alan, good morning. It's Peter. I just wanted to ask you, obviously we're at the start of the Premier League season, but it's an exciting one for Ireland in the context of a lot of players. I'm thinking Jeff Hendrick moving to Newcastle. There's a lot to look forward to with Stephen Kenny's squad now, with the bigger test coming up against Slovakia. What was your making of the various transfer movements, or would you like to see a few more, like Troy Parrott move to Millwall? Would you like to see a few more players get guaranteed game time?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's important that they're all playing whatever the level is at, Peter. Obviously, the highest level, the better. And I think for Jeff Hendrick, as you say, he'd be rejuvenated by that move, because they've also signed 3 or 4 other lads and they've done good business, Newcastle, in the off-season. So hopefully that will rejuvenate Jeff. Because we need all our players playing as well as they are at club level to obviously come over then to when the international games are and perform to the same level with ourselves. And that hasn't been the case necessarily with some of them. And I think, to be fair to Jeff, he's been stuck in a bit of a rut there with Burnley, because he's been played out of position. And I know he hasn't really enjoyed it, whereas this exactly is what he needed, the move to Newcastle, which will hopefully rejuvenate him. Matt Doherty has an unbelievable fresh challenge for himself as well, going into that Spurs dressing room. I'm watching the documentary at the moment, and that's a lively dressing room that he's gone into as well, Peter. And I'm sure he'll be loving that and looking forward to that. The Sheffield United boys will be hoping to have a good a season as what they had last year. So there is a lot to be positive about. I know there was a bit of doom and gloom last week after the game with Stephen, but it's going to take a bit of time, Peter, as we've always said. And give him that chance, give him the opportunity, give him the time, and you will see the results of it. But everybody jumping down his neck after 2 games is not the way forward.
If Jose Mourinho could do half for Matt Doherty, what they did for Damien Duff at Chelsea, we would be onto a winner there.
Well, from what I've heard already from people close to Matt, he's been absolutely brilliant to him. And I know we have this persona, and myself included, I was never Mourinho's biggest fan, and I don't like some of the antics out of him. But from what I've seen in the documentary, and I know you can say, well, the cameras are on, he might be playing up to it. But from what I've heard with the move with Matt Doherty as well, and the way he's treated him and looked after him, I heard he's been absolutely brilliant. So hopefully that's the same going forward, because we need Matt playing. Obviously, it's a huge challenge from going to a big club, but we need him playing at that big club with putting in the performances that he's put in at Wolves over the last 2 or 3 years, hopefully.
Yeah, well, across the water, it is getting underway a little bit later on. Of course, Liverpool getting their campaign off to the start against the newcomers at 5:30 today. We don't have a lot of time on it, but where do you see it going? I mean, I know Peter's looking at Liverpool. Paul is thinking Man City. I'm sort of thinking Liverpool as well. Where are you thinking this year?
I'm not thinking anything like that at all, Reggie. No. And I know we don't have time, so I'm just going to give you a name who's Leeds, a dark horse for me. Chelsea.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, I think they've done unbelievable business, and the fact that they've signed such quality and 5 unbelievable players, I know they paid a lot of money, but 5 top quality signings, you have to throw them into the mix now. I think Liverpool should have strengthened. They're obviously a brilliant 1-11, but I'm not sure they have the squad to go the whole season and be as good as what they were last year. Man City, I think you will see a better performance from them this year, but I'm pushing Chelsea.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.